What were some positives Tennessee can take from the Alabama game in Tuscaloosa from Saturday night? Plus, who graded out well with Pro Football Focus and who had a grade of 30.3 that played 81 snaps on the defensive side of the football? I'll tell you all that and more here on Award Wednesday, Locked On Vols.
You are Locked On Vols, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, good Wednesday, everybody, and welcome into Locked On Vols. It's your team every single day. I'm your host, Eric Kane, at underscore Kaner on Twitter, at Locked On Vols, my Facebook page, at Kaner on Air. Guys, I appreciate you listening to this podcast and for your continued support, making Locked On Vols your first listen each and every weekday morning, completely free and on every single platform. Looking forward to our conversation with Josh Ward. It's a two-part conversation. We'll chat with him in segments one and two, and then we will get into some good, the bad, and the ugly from the Pro Football Focus grades over that Alabama game. We got a lot of more content coming up later in the week, some more interviews, a little bit of basketball content as well, and so you guys don't want to miss any of that here on Locked On Vols this week. So without further ado, let's get to Josh Ward here on Award Wednesday. Josh, Tennessee goes on the road, puts up a really good fight against Alabama, but ultimately falls 52-24. Kind of your takeaways from that football game where, again, you can see improvement in Josh Heupel's club, but ultimately the results kind of look the same as they have the last 5 to 6 years.
Yeah, Tennessee continued to stay in the game, which was encouraging, I think, for most Tennessee fans watching, because there have been too many games where by halftime, certainly by the start of the fourth quarter, fans knew exactly how it was going to play out. Now, I'm sure a lot of fans still had a feeling in their stomach that, you know, this fourth quarter might not go our way, but at least you had to sit down and watch and see how it played out. Now, you can also look at, you know, halftime numbers. I looked and saw 20 first downs for Alabama, 5 for Tennessee. And by the end, Alabama still tripled Tennessee. Tennessee had big plays, and that helped keep the gap closed for a lot of the game, and also took advantage of opportunities when Alabama made just an incredibly stupid mistake. I say Alabama because there were several players on running into the punter. Tennessee immediately was able to strike and score. Alabama on the other side is probably saying, hey, if we don't have that happen, Tennessee doesn't hit the play, and we're able to get a bigger lead early. So you can always play that game, but Tennessee continues to play hard, and the buy-in is clearly there. There needs to be improvement, but the opportunity is still there to win 7 games. Tennessee has a really good chance to go beat Kentucky. It won't be easy, but it's on the table, and that's still what I think most fans would have asked for. And if that happens, Tennessee should absolutely be a 7-5 team.
Josh, it was a day where it was a struggle offensively. I know you scored 24 points. You had a couple explosive plays, and credit Tennessee's offense for creating those explosive plays. Was it 59 yards to Peyton, 70 yards to Tillman? And that Tillman play, I mean, Joby, the cornerback, had his back turned to Tillman. I don't know if those two saw it really quick and snapped it quickly or whatever, but Tillman, who's not the fleetest of foot, able to get well behind Joby and bring in that score there on that 70-yarder, so that was good. But Tennessee couldn't run the football at all. Tennessee had struggles getting first downs. Tennessee was awful on third downs, yet again, Tennessee found a way to be in this football game, a one-score game in the fourth quarter. Does that just go to show how much this team has improved and really how well this team is coached under this new offensive regime in Josh Heupel, that things were going against you all night long offensively, yet you were still in that football game?
Yeah, I think that's part of it, and I think Tennessee's pretty good at finding ways to take advantage of other teams' mistakes, and there were examples with Tennessee's big plays against Alabama. You do want to see more consistency, and Tennessee's lack of a running game is something to pay attention to next week when the Vols go to Lexington, because Kentucky's run defense has been pretty good. Now, Alabama's, I'd say, much better statistically, but Kentucky's top four in the conference. Georgia's going to be really tough. But this Kentucky game is what we're going to come back to maybe get a better gauge of just how good this offense is right now. Against teams like, you know, even Florida, but Alabama and Georgia for sure, their athleticism is so elite that it's just going to create big-time problems with their size up front and everything that they're able to do. But against a team like Kentucky, which is well-coached, and they're fine personnel-wise, but they're not Alabama, they're not Georgia. So that's where we should maybe get a better sense, and Tennessee's health will be a question. Tennessee probably missed Cade Mays against Alabama, but in the run game, I don't know that he would have made that much of a difference. But Tennessee is still able to find ways to hit big plays. You know, that was Eric, remember that was part of the conversation at the beginning of the season with Joe Milton as the quarterback, that he could hit big plays down the field. Fans know that didn't happen. There was a question, could Hendon Hooker do it? And that he has.
Josh, we're going to dive into the Pro Football Focus grades later on in the show, but at the time of this recording, behind the curtain, I haven't peeped at those PFF grades just yet, but just by observing that game once in real time on site and then the next, the day after, on the telecast, I can tell you defensively, Aaron Beasley played his worst game he's ever played. I can tell you the safeties, Jalen McCullough, Trayvon Flowers, were so slow rotating over to give help to that sinking linebacker. Tennessee had its struggles defensively, whereas the defensive line, not as consistent as much as you'd like, but I thought pushed the pocket and really put some pressure on Young a lot of times during this football game. Defensively, I think it just kind of goes to show you your lack of depth, your lack of player talent, and just kind of the issues you have. They were a little bit exposed against a good team like Alabama. And so in recognizing that, you also go back to just appreciate the job that Tim Banks and his staff have really done on that side of the football all year long.
Yeah, I think Tennessee's defense has to be kind of graded on a curve. And I think some of the good feelings are probably from the low expectations at the beginning of the season, because honestly, my expectations for this defense were low.
Same.
But it does say something that we come out of the Alabama game offering some compliments to the defense when they give up more than 30 first downs and 52 points, right? I mean, that says something. But again, the efforts there, they have been tough to run on a lot of the time. Those guys up front who have played a lot of football, they to me have made the biggest difference. Guys like Matthew Butler, he would lead that conversation. But, you know, others that have played a lot.
Jaquan Blakely.
Been in and out. Yeah, Jaquan Blakely deserves a ton of credit. Latrell Bumpus, who was out back in, Caleb Tremblay coming in. So they're able to play a good number of guys. Garland. So that has to help. But at linebacker, I mean, Eric, they're not incredibly talented, and they're not deep at all. They just don't have many guys they can count on. So I give credit to the way that Jeremy Banks and Solon Page have played and Aaron Beasley at that position. But that's where you are now with Juwan Mitchell not playing. So they deserve credit. They just shouldn't be expected of too much. And then same for the secondary. I actually thought that was a group that could play pretty well this year, and that's probably been up and down. But again, it's on a curve. This is an upcoming game, again, to go back to Kentucky, where they don't have the firepower that Alabama does. So I think it should be a much better opportunity for Tennessee. But Kentucky's going to look at film, and they're going to tell Will Levis, hey, if things break down, you have a chance to go pick up a first down for us, because Matt Corral did it with ease. Bryce Young did it with ease. May not be as easy for Levis, but they're going to see that and try to exploit that opportunity if they can't pick up first downs through the air.
Big thanks to Josh Ward for stopping by the show. We'll talk with him again here in just a moment in segment number two. But Prize Picks is the leader in college football, a daily fantasy, not just football, but every sport. And Prize Picks offers more college football props, though, than anyone in the entire world. The star players from the Power Five all the way to the mid-majors. Prize Picks offers props of anything you can think of for total yardage and touchdowns, even interceptions thrown. All the new users, okay, deposits in your promo code, if you use it with Locked On, you're going to receive 100% instant deposit match up to $100. Just use that promo code Locked on your initial deposit. Pick 2 to 5 players, the over and under in the projections, and you can win up to 10 times on any entry. It's just you against the projected numbers. And PrizePicks allows mixed sport entries as well. The over in LeBron's points, the under in Mahomes' touchdowns on the same entry. Use the award-winning app on both the App Store and Google Play. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's that easy. PrizePicks is safe and offers fast withdrawals. Don't hesitate. Check out PrizePicks.com. Use that promo code LOCKEDON or go to your app store and download it today. PrizePicks, it's daily fantasy made easy.
Josh Ward, host of Sports 180, former host of Locked On Vols, joins us every Wednesday here on the podcast for Ward Wednesday. Josh, I mean, Hendon Hooker's good, right? He's good this year. I mean, number three in the country in quarterback rating. 17 touchdowns to 2 interceptions. He threw an interception there in the fourth quarter on a miscommunication on a read, and that was the first since week 2, the first game that he really played in this year in terms of significant snaps. Just how different is the conversation now compared to the last 4 years, where every game you go out there, if 5 trots out there, you know you're capable of doing some things offensively because you're getting good quarterback play?
Well, it's the first time in 5 years that Tennessee fans are not questioning who should be out there at quarterback. Nobody with any kind of reason is saying that it should be Joe Milton or Harrison Bailey. So that says something right there. And Hendon Hooker has earned that spot. It's not, well, the other guys look so bad, so it has to be Hendon Hooker. He's looked good, and he's continued to improve. And, you know, think about that has happened with him not having a fall camp where he was the guy. He didn't start out the season as the guy. Now, he's played a good amount, and he was the most proven quarterback coming into the season, what he did at Virginia Tech compared to what Joe Milton did at Michigan. But he had to still win over the coaches who had decided to go with another guy, and that's obviously happened as well. So his playmaking ability, he's hit some shots down the field, as I mentioned earlier, and he's just instilled some confidence in this offense. And he's a good player, and he's a true dual-threat guy that can make plays through the air, and obviously his running ability is really impressive. So with him having another year of eligibility, assuming he elects to take that and come back, that's something for this offense to build on, because I think he's easily a top half of the league quarterback. And you know, the position's a little questionable this year in the league, but I think Hendon's in the 3 to 5 range if you're ranking quarterbacks in the SEC.
Josh, it's bye week, so we can kind of take a step back, get a breather, and kind of look at some different things before we really dive into Kentucky, who will be on the road at Mississippi State this weekend. You mentioned if Hendon Hooker elects to come back. I don't think he's a prospect right now. Of course, he's not made an official announcement. He won't make an announcement until after the season. But I don't think he's an NFL guy right now, so it would make sense for him to come back and play another year. Cedric Tillman is another guy that falls in that category. Jacob Warren's a guy. Princeton Fant is a guy that falls in that category. Kayron Calvert potentially is a guy. I don't think Darnell Wright is ready for the NFL just yet. I mean, you look around offensively and even defensively as well with guys like Alante Taylor potentially, Trayvon Flowers, and some others. There's a lot of guys on this team that can take advantage of that super senior status next year, come back, and Tennessee, you don't want to look too far ahead right now, but Tennessee could return a decent crop of players next year for year number two in the system and year number two of Josh Heupel.
Yeah, the offense next year could be easily one of the best in the SEC. It's already top half for sure in the conference, and at its best, it's top three or four, I would say, in the conference. So if you can get guys back starting at quarterback and you can continue to build the offensive line, that to me is where it is, because I think everything else will take care of itself at the skill position players. But guys understanding the system and knowing what they're supposed to do as opposed to this year, still trying to fill it out in year one. And yes, probably caused some of the penalties that we've seen at times because this offense can, I think, cause that to happen. But you have to, if you're watching this offense and what it's able to do, I think you have to love it, especially compared to where things have been the last several years, and also recognize that things could improve if Josh Heupel can have his quarterback come back. I think that would be in Hendon Hooker's best interest. I know it would be in Tennessee's best interest. That would help somebody like Taven Jackson. You know, think if Hendon Hooker decided to leave. Eric, you know how it works. A highly touted guy comes in, too much can be expected early. I don't think that would be fair to Taven, so it would allow him time to learn under the coaching staff, develop within the offense, and then maybe in a couple of years he's ready. Maybe it's somebody else, because I'd say they'll look through the transfer portal again. But there's a lot of upside for what they can do offensively. The entire roster needs to be built, and recruiting is a really important focus for this coaching staff to look at over the next less than 2 months now. We're at 50 days, roughly, until the early signing period. So a lot of things need to happen, but the offense is in good shape, and it can get better for sure in the next couple of years.
One more. Tennessee needed this bye week desperately. I mean, you went 8 straight games and, a gauntlet stretch in the SEC that's not done yet. You're just halfway through. But Tennessee needed this. You got a lot of guys who are banged up trying to get them back for that Kentucky win. But when we look back and look at season one as a whole so far, 8 games in, is Josh Heupel, compared to what you thought this season would be, is Tennessee on pace, ahead of the curve, or behind the curve? Because I think, at least record-wise, and I wrote a column on this earlier this week, I think record-wise, Tennessee's exactly where you thought it would be right now. Now, on paper, I think they might be ahead of the curve because they're doing things so well, but you had wins against the teams you were supposed to win. A lot of people had Pittsburgh as a loss to begin the season. You handled Missouri. That was a toss-up game. You handled South Carolina. I think record-wise, Tennessee's exactly where we thought it would be, but also you can make the argument that this team's ahead of the curve by a long shot with Josh Heupel here in year one at this stage in the season.
Yeah, record-wise, Tennessee is almost exactly where I projected the beginning of the season. I say that because our friends at GameDayOnRockyTop.com, to just give them a plug, Will Shutton comes on Sports 180 every Friday. They do this win total machine. I filled it out at the beginning of the season, and I had Tennessee, I believe, at 6.6 wins. So my official prediction was 6-6, but I was closer to 7 than 5, obviously. And that's where Tennessee is. Tennessee, I think, should be 6-6 at worst this year and can be 7-5. So record-wise, Tennessee is where I thought it could be on the positive side. From a production standpoint, the way the players have developed, Tennessee is at least where I thought, maybe ahead in some areas. Because you know, part of it, I look at the competition. And Missouri's maybe a little behind, but just compare Tennessee to Missouri. At the beginning of the season, the Vols are being picked behind the Tigers. Who's saying Missouri's ahead of Tennessee right now? I'm not. Tennessee ahead of South Carolina? Very clearly. So you look at the production, you compare it to the competition. Yeah, I'd love to see Tennessee play Florida again. I'm still picking the Gators, and look, Florida won by 24 points. So saying Tennessee's better than Florida, no. But as the season has gone along, is Tennessee a little bit better now than it was? You know, and Florida's dealing with some issues down there in Gainesville. I'm a little confused. But I think Tennessee's in a good spot, and recruiting still is ultimately going to determine how far the Vols can go, because scheme's one thing, coaching and buying and all that stuff. Alabama showed you have to have the players. Georgia's going to show you have to have the players. Florida, even, earlier this season. So that's what's going to determine it. But in terms of the culture of the program, the way the players have responded to coaching, and the leadership in that locker room, I think you have to be thrilled if you're a Tennessee fan with what you see right now. And then you hope for more in the future.
We got the bye week blues, no Tennessee football this weekend, but there are no bye weeks on Sports 180. What's coming up the rest of the week on the program?
Yeah, a lot of football talk, and basketball's getting closer. So we're excited about that. So it's a time to look ahead to Tennessee basketball, which fans should be excited about, and a little extra time to look at Kentucky, Florida, Georgia this week in the SEC East to see if the Gators really are falling hard.
Again, thank you to Josh Ward for stopping by every Wednesday here on Locked On Vols. You will hear from that man, Josh Ward. Pro Football Focus grades coming up next. But before we get into that, guys, Built Bar. If you haven't tried a Built Bar by now, you really are missing out. And they say it's a protein bar, but it does not taste like one. You have to try one of these amazing Built Bars yourself to believe it, okay? Most protein bars are chalky or waxy or just plain hard to choke down, but a Built Bar is soft. It's covered in 100% real chocolate, and when you bite into it, you know you're eating something different. It's more of an experience, really, and one that you're going to enjoy. In fact, you'd swear you're eating a candy bar. Built Bars are low-carb, low-calorie, low-fat, low-sugar, high in protein, all so healthy, and it benefits you on top of just purely being delicious with so many flavors. Another great thing about Built Bar, they are so many mouth-watering flavors, including coconut, raspberry, mint brownie, coconut almond, salted caramel, double chocolate, and cherry. This month, Built Bar is coming out with new limited time flavors every 3 to 4 days, so be sure to check their website often. You don't want to miss out. Go to BuiltBar.com, use that promo code LOCK15, and you'll get 15% off your next order. Use promo code LOCK15 and 15% off at BuiltBar.com. And yeah, back and better than ever, a new web interface for the start of basketball season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. It's BetOnline.ag. And BetOnline.ag remains your number one spot for all your football and basketball action this year on the gridiron and the hardwood. Head on over to their new updated desktop on their mobile website and sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on that first deposit. Just use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive your bonus. Again, it's head on over to the new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up at BetOnline.ag, promo code locked on. From basketball, football, to baseball, postseason, NHL, boxing, UFC, right to your favorite Las Vegas casino games, don't wait to take advantage of all these amazing flavors for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports. BetOnline, it is where the game starts. A final segment left here on a Wednesday, Locked On Vols. Thanks for making Locked On Vols your first listen. And now we're going to get into a little pro football focus grades. Bringing it back, we didn't get a hit on him last week, got a little busy, but I did want to discuss who performed well in the eyes of pro football focus and who did not from that game against Alabama. And guys, I got to be honest with you, the grades overall offensively are not bad. They're really not bad defensively, as you'd expect. There's some grades that are slacking down there, specifically some tackling, but overall, really not as bad as I thought they could be, nonetheless. So let's take a look at the grading scale again. And keep in mind, Take everything with a grain of salt. Pro Football Focus does not know the individual assignments, though they may claim they do. They don't know all the ins and the outs and the intricacies of the game, but they do tell a good story, and that's why I like to bring them on the podcast. 50 and below is a backup. 50 to 59 is a below-average starter. 60 to 69 is an average starter. 70 to 79 is an above-average starter. 80 to 89 is very good, and 90 to 99 is considered elite. We will start on the offensive end, where really there was not a whole lot of players that played. Only 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players outside of the starters really got reps in this football game on the offensive end. Cedric Tillman led the way. He had a career game in both receptions and both receiving yards and all the like, and he had the highest Pro Football Focus grade of anybody on the team, mind you. It comes in at 76, and he led the way there. Darnell Wright, which is encouraging, came in second at 71, and again, that's considered technically an above-average starter. So Darnell Wright, it's 57 reps, 36 pass-blocking reps. He had a 65.2 pass-blocking grade, a 71.0 run-blocking grade for the 71.1 grade. Jerome Carvin comes in next. He actually shifted back to his normal position of left guard and graded out a 65.2 pass-blocking grade for Jerome Carvin, 82.5. And see, that's where I'm confused, because I saw Fedarian Mathis getting that backfield all night long, and I saw him pass him off to Cooper Mays a lot of times, but Fedarian Mathis would split that B gap, or split that A gap, and I don't know whose fault that is. I would say it's probably Cooper Mays, but I think Jerome Carvin could have helped out a little bit more. But nonetheless, according to Pro Football Focus, Jerome Carvin, an 82.5 pass blocking grade, which is encouraging. Third highest grade at 65.2. Javonte Payton comes in at the fourth highest grade, tied for fourth, rather, with Hendon Hooker. Both of those guys, 62.5. Javonte Payton, he had 52 total snaps and did a nice job there. Of course, the 57-yard touchdown reception. Hendon Hooker, 62.5 for Tennessee's quarterback. And you look at the passing chart, he was 2 of 2 for down-the-field passing, 20 yards plus on the right side. He was 1 of 2, 20 yards plus down the middle of the field. Combined, he was 3 of 5 at 20 yards plus down the field for, 168 yards and 2 touchdowns. So Hendon Hooker, again, was connecting on down-the-field passing, which is a good sign. Middle of the field, 10 yards to the 20-yard range. He was 3 of 4, 35 yards and a touchdown. That, of course, was the slant to Valus Jones in the first quarter. And then at the line of scrimmage, behind the line of scrimmage, within 10 yards, 3 of 4 in the middle of the field, 2 of 2 on each side, throwing to Jabari Small out of the backfield. Found a whole lot of success there. Hendon Hooker, again, another solid game. One area where he did struggle a little bit, though the reps were really not that frequent. He was 1 of 2 when blitzed the other night, okay? 26.2 was his grade, and he threw an interception. But for the most of the time, he was not blitzed, and he was kept clean. Just a couple of under-pressure snaps for Hendon Hooker when he actually threw the football. So Hendon Hooker, a decent day overall again, and 282 yards through the air, plus, of course, 3 touchdowns, and only a second interception of the season. We'll move on. You've got Cooper Mays that came in at a 60.9, 6th highest graded out guy. Pass-blocking grade, a 34.7, so you know, you need your ankle at all times, don't get me wrong, but of course, planting and chopping your feet and pass blocking, I think that is going to hinder him a little bit. Plus, again, as I mentioned, Fedarian Mathis. So Cooper Mays, not a good pass blocking grade at 34.7, 60.9 overall. Dane Davis, who played every snap at right tackle, 58.9 was his overall grade. Dane Davis graded out as the second lowest offensive lineman as a starter. But nonetheless, he overall, all things considered, he did not allow Will Anderson Jr. to take over this football game, which was good to see. Bayless Jones Jr. at 58.8 comes in. James Robinson, who played the first two snaps of the ball game as a jumbo tight end, graded out at 58.5, and then we didn't see that package at all. Jabari Small, 10th highest grade on offense, 58.4 was his grade. 75.9 in pass blocking, which is good improvement for Jabari Small. That is good to see. Tyon Evans, a 57.1 overall. He came in a couple of slots down, 76.9 pass blocking, good to see. Jacob Warren, tight end, 56.0. Princeton Fant, the other tight end, 53.3. And then coming in at the very bottom as the lowest offensive grade, Javonte Spraggins, 46.1. His pass blocking grade, 30.2. So the interior of Tennessee's offensive line We saw it in real life, and the grades reflected really struggling to protect Hendon Hooker and keeping him clean in terms of the interior of the offensive line the other night. We will shift over to defense really, really quick, and we'll talk starters. The highest graded starter for Tennessee and a guy making his first start, Warren Burrell, was sick. He did not play. He was on the sideline, though. It was Kamal Haddon. And I forgot to mention this on the podcast. I forgot to make note of it, really, in my notes that I posted at VolQuest.com. He is a guy that stood out a little bit on film. I thought that he played a pretty good game, and the grade reflects. The second highest graded out player on defense, 73.44 Kamal Haddon. And that's really good to see. He played 88 snaps on defense. So good for him stepping up for Tennessee when you needed it the most. You continue to move on. Tied for fourth highest grades, a couple of defensive linemen, Byron Young and Matthew Butler. 71.9 for those two guys, doing a good job continuing to push the pocket. Deshaun Terry, the sixth highest grade overall. He had 10 snaps on the day at a 70.3. Alante Taylor, a 65.9 grade, though a 44.7 in terms of tackling. Roman Harris comes in at 8, 64.6. Jaquan Blakely, a starter, comes in at 9, 62.6 at 44 snaps for Tennessee. You had Latrell Bumpus, who had 46 snaps on the night. 60.1 was his grade for Tennessee. He continued to move on. Theo Jackson, only 20 snaps. Of course, he left there in the first half. 54.6 was his grade. And I'm skipping around to the starters, guys, and now we're getting into, you know, some grades that are not so good. I'll hit on Brandon Turnage here. He had 24 snaps, came in and played a little bit of star whenever Theo left, but also spent a lot of time with Nico Slaughter. Brandon Turnage, a 53.7 grade. He had 81.5 in terms of tackling, and that's ironic because he got ran over once, but still made the tackle. But here we get into some alarming things. At 18 overall on defense, Jeremy Banks, 78 overall snaps played, 49.8 was his grade. A 37.0 were the tackling grades. Okay. 42.8 against the rush, 59.2 in his pass rush, 62.6 in coverage. A 49.8 overall grade for Jeremy Banks. I didn't think that he was an all-star. I certainly didn't think he was as bad as the next guy I'm going to get into here in just a minute. So I guess not next. I'll save him for last because, again, it's bad. But nonetheless, Jeremy Banks, not the best day per Pro Football Focus. Amari Thomas, 18 snaps, 48.4. Jalen McCullough, the fourth lowest grade defensively for Tennessee. 38.5 was the grade, 33.1 in coverage for Jalen McCullough, 45.8 in tackling, 67.6 in pass rush, which he only had three reps of those. But not a good day for Jalen McCullough. Trayvon Flowers, his fellow safety, 37.7 overall. You're looking at Jalen McCullough and Trayvon Flowers, who played 93 and 92 snaps respectively and graded out at 38.5 and 37.7 respectively. Just not good. Trayvon Flowers, 31.3 in coverage. You don't want to see those stats from your safeties. You don't want to see these grades from your two starting safeties. And then comes in Aaron Beasley. 30.3 was the grade. 81 snaps for Aaron Beasley. 30.3 was the grade. 26.3 was the grade for tackling. 28.6 was the grade for coverage. He had five pass rushing reps. He had a 55.4. And against the run, he graded out at 51.4. Like I said, just not the best day for Aaron Beasley whatsoever. Just not a good day. And these grades certainly reflected. And then the final grade on defense. Yes, there's one more. Wasn't a starter, but Solon Page. 24 reps overall, 23.1 was his overall grade. 29.2 against the run, 25.6 in coverage, 32 even tackling. So you could tell in real life, you could tell upon the rewatch, Tennessee's linebackers did not play well whatsoever. Of course, you're just playing three, you have no depth. You're playing with house money, I get it, and you're playing against Alabama, I understand. They put you in a bind, and they're just flat-out good. But Tennessee's linebackers, Tennessee's safeties, did not play well whatsoever. I thought up front, Tennessee played okay, and as you move backwards, it got worse and worse, right? Except for Kamal Haddon, again, a pretty solid day, and a pretty solid day for Alante Taylor. So those were the grades for Pro Football Focus. Again, that doesn't mean everything. It just tells a little bit of the story, but it does tell a story, and that's why I like to read them off to you guys, and I hope you get something out of them. That's going to do it here for a Wednesday Locked On Vols. Big thanks to Josh Ward for sitting down for 2 seconds with us here today. Got plenty more coming up as the week goes on right here on Locked On Vols. Thanks for making it your number one listen each and every day. Now let's make Locked On SEC your number two listen with Chris Gordy of Sports 790. That's Locked On SEC, SEC news 5 days a week with Chris Gordy. Make that your number two listen right now here today. Guys, I appreciate it. We'll talk again on Thursday, but until then, enjoy the rest of your Wednesday, everybody.